Okay, let's do this. Hello, Bootstrappers. Welcome to Bootstrapped Web, the show for business owners like you and me who believe that to get to where we're going, we have to learn by doing. I'm Brian Castle. You can follow me on Twitter at CastJam or on my blog at CastJam.com. Today, you're going to hear my interview with Nathan Barry. You might know about Nathan's recent six-month challenge where he conceptualized and launched a $5,000 per month SaaS app. And he just finished that challenge up. So there's a lot of information about that on his blog. Nathan is also the author of three self-published books. And that's what we spent most of our conversation talking about. As I always aim to do in all of my interviews, I try to dig into the parts of the story that often go untold. You know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, the work, the tactics. So in my interview with Nathan, I was really most interested to hear him talk about his very first book, because that was released at a time before he built up the large audience that he has today. And then you'll hear the story of how he managed to write and release that first book and then earn over $10,000 on his first day of the release. And again, this was at a time when Nathan had less than 500 Twitter followers. So that really gives you a sense of you know, how he was able to accomplish something really so successful, starting with a very very small audience. So it is very inspiring. You know, we also talked about his other two books, as well as Nathan's portfolio of products, and really how he manages to handle so many different things all at once, which is certainly something that I can relate to. You know, this interview was a real treat for me because I'm gearing up to write my first book. So there were certainly lots of takeaways that I'll be putting into action over the next few months for sure. And if you want to hear more about that book that I'm putting together, be sure to head over to castjam.com, join my newsletter, and you know, I'm going to be putting out more information and things about that over the next few weeks. Okay, so let's get into the main event, my interview with Nathan Barry. Nathan Barry, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Cool. So for those who may not know you or have seen what you do, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do?
Sure. So I started out as a web designer, and more recently, I've written a few books on designing, one on designing iPhone applications, one on designing web applications, and then most recently, I wrote a book called Authority, which is on building an audience, writing a book, marketing, promoting, and profiting from that book. So it's a bit of a broad topic, but it's a ton of fun.
Very cool. You know, this was kind of a difficult interview for me to prepare for because you're involved in so many different things. You know, you're doing iPhone apps, or iOS apps, books, and of course you have your latest or current project, ConvertKit, which is a SaaS application for email marketing. And so, you know, things are kind of all over the place. But you know, one thing that that really struck me, and I think strikes a lot of people when they first come across your stuff online, is that clearly you're a very skilled designer. Everything that you do is communicated visually very well. So can you tell us a little bit about your background as a designer? I mean, like, how did you start out? Did you go to design school, or are you self-taught, or how did that work?
Yeah, so I'm self-taught, though in a way I don't like the term because I didn't come up with any of the material myself or anything like that. I guess I'm more self-motivated in that I didn't, you know, I didn't need somebody assigning me web design homework in order for me to actually get it done. You know, but I'm not really self-taught because other people put out, you know, hundreds of fantastic blog posts on everything from visual design to HTML to CSS. And all I did was learn those things. But I didn't go to school for it. When I was like early on in high school, I started to pick up, you know, basic HTML. I just liked that I could type something into a text file, save it, and hit refresh, and you know, the background color would be red. Things like that. my original sites were pretty ugly, of course, but, you know, the first site I designed that I got paid for, I made $100 on, and it was for the Idaho Chess Association. Awesome. And I think that site is still online now. But anyway, so I just kept learning, kept doing more freelancing, gradually raised my rates, and, you know, then I got into apps and, you know, both web and iOS. And now I focus on, you know, anything product rather than just web design.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm a strong believer in learning by doing. You know, same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't really call it self-taught either. I just reading, you know, a lot of those tutorials and blogs out there, and really just when you have a task, when you have to deliver for a client or you know, you're doing some kind of project, you just got to kind of figure it out, right? So the years, it just builds up that way.
When I was learning to code iPhone applications, I don't have a lot of experience programming, but what I would do is break it down, figure out what feature I was trying to add, and break it down to the smallest possible steps. You know, so at one point I'd realize, okay, the easiest, or, you know, the smallest thing that I need to do next is I need to pass a string from this view to that view. Okay, and then that gave me a really specific thing that I could start, you know, doing some Google searches. I'd come across Stack Overflow. I'd come across a few tutorials, you know, read those, implement that, and then go move on to my next smallest possible problem. And that's my way of learning by doing.
Awesome. Yeah, and you know, I think it is so much easier today. I mean, with sites like Stack Overflow, and you know, looking back a couple of years ago when I was getting started, probably you as well. I mean, when you Google, there might be one, maybe two little, you know, strings of an idea. But today, I mean, you can get the answers so much more quickly.
Yeah, the other thing I would do is find somebody who's much more experienced that you can go to for help. Because what I would do is I would code my application till I got stuck, and then till I got totally stuck and I couldn't find answers online, and then I would code, you know, a different feature until I got stuck, and then every so often I'd take it to a friend, Chris, who I actually worked with at the time, and, you know, ask him for help, and he would quickly point out what was wrong and teach me how to fix it. So
yeah, definitely. So you kind of started out as a designer, doing consulting work. Is that right? Or did you get straight into products?
I did freelance web design for quite a while. Did it through college. And then I joined a software design team at a small startup, and then grew with that startup and led their design team. And there we worked on almost exclusively on web apps, but that's also where I got into iOS.
Gotcha. So, I mean, how would you say that you transitioned into being an entrepreneur? I mean, before you even started doing products or iOS apps, I mean, was there someone or a business or something that inspired you to learn more about business and marketing and not just focus on design?
You know, in a way, I'd been doing business all the way through. As far as In my freelance design work, you know, I joined the local chamber of commerce and went to leads groups and got to know the business side of things as far as getting clients, working out contracts, and all of that. And so at that point, it was just a matter of, you know, switching from just working hourly to then working on a product. My journey's been, you know, my first businesses, I made money just by working hourly. My next products, or kind of the next phase of my businesses, was one-time sales. So that was iPhone applications, and then I got more sophisticated with the books, all still one-time sales. And then most recently, I've moved with ConvertKit, my email marketing tool. I've moved to a SaaS model, so recurring sales. So I've kind of I guess as far as revenue models and business, I've done all three, and you know, making money is good, but making money from customers who pay you every month is best.
Absolutely. So can you talk about your very first product? Was that an iOS app? Or?
Yeah, so let's see. My very first product, that's a good question. I tried to start a WordPress theme company at one point. I have a lot of failed projects, but we'll go with that one.
Maybe we can talk about what like one thing that you started that didn't quite lift off before you hit something that worked.
Yeah, so the WordPress theme company, it was called Legend Themes. I think the site is still online. I didn't know how to get an audience to it. That was the biggest problem. Actually, first I waited. I was thinking, I'm building all these WordPress themes one off for clients, and so I knew a ton about it. I think I was, you know, just in that last year and a half or so, I'd built like 50 WordPress themes for clients. And so I knew that area, and I kept thinking I should sell WordPress themes. And a company called Studio Press had just started up. Actually, it wasn't called Studio Press at the time, but and I thought, it's somebody's already doing that.
There's already one or two themes companies. Yeah. There can't be any more than that.
Right. And then, you know, WooTheme starts, and then, right. You know, like you get four or five, and each time I kept thinking, oh, it's even more crowded now. And then somebody else would start up and be successful. Anyway, so a crowded market is not a bad thing. But once I did finally start, I didn't know how to actually draw users to it and get an audience. So I made a bunch of themes, and I was fairly proud of some of them, and I think I sold two themes ever, so $140 in revenue. But it also brought in a small consulting job, so I guess which was $1,000. So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of did the same thing back in like 2009 or 2010. I was watching WooThemes, and then I started ThemeJam, mm-hmm. which that's also still around today, but it's very much off to the side, you know, never really did much with it.
Yeah. So that was my first venture into, I guess, what I consider real products. I sold some iPhone apps after that, some successful, some not.
And then, I mean, marketing an iOS app, it's a very different thing. You're going into the App Store marketplace, right? I mean, how did you go about marketing those first, iOS apps?
Yeah, so my first iOS app was called One Voice, and the idea behind it is that if you can't speak, so you have nonverbal autism or you had a stroke and lost the ability to speak, then you use One Voice on the iPad, and it's got all these tiles, and each tile has a word or a short phrase and then a picture or an icon, and so you tap on those to build a sentence, and then it has synthesized speech, so it speaks for you. It's a very, very, very small focused market, but it replaces a $7,000 like dedicated hardware medical device. Sure. And does a much, much better job. And so I knew I wouldn't sell very many copies of that, just because, you know, I wasn't going to put it up for $2 and sell tens of thousands of copies. So what I did instead was sold it for $200. My idea being the iPad at the time was $500. So iPad plus app came to $700, which was 10% of the competition. So that sounded like an okay price point. So with that app, what I was able to do is focus a lot more on direct sales. I could put more time into every sale because I was making a decent amount of money for every sale. After paying royalties to everybody, I was making $114 a sale.
Did you develop a direct sales process? I mean, we're actually going out and finding customers like one by one, or how did that work?
So what I was doing is I was finding speech language pathologists who weren't the customers themselves, but they would be talking to parents and patients and people who would need these devices. And so they were these tiny distribution centers all over the country. So they might, over the course of a year, they might see 30, 35 people that were a candidate for one of these. And they might recommend that 5 to 10 of, maybe 10 of them actually get one. And so what I did is the first month that One Voice came out, I contacted a bunch of people and said, a bunch of speech language pathologists and said, I have this new app. I'd love to know what you think of it. I'll give you a free copy in trade for feedback. And the people that were interested got back to me. I gave those free copies. I ended up getting a lot of feedback, iterating the app pretty quickly. Those initial people liked it, that they could see that, I sent them an email once I put their changes in the app and they could download the new version. And so they liked that. They bought into that. And it worked fairly well. I think the app started out at about ranging between 500 and 1,000 a month in sales. At the peak, it did $5,000 in a month. And then I kind of stopped focusing on it for a while, and it's tapered back down to where it now does about 800 to 1,000 a month in sales. But that's without any marketing in the last year.
Nice. Very cool. So let's kind of skip ahead a little bit and get into your books. So coming out of doing iOS apps, when you got into writing your first book on, designing iOS apps, is that?
Yeah. At the time I had since quit my job. I had a couple iOS apps. And I was spending all my time designing, whether for other clients or friends or all of that.
So at this point, you were still kind of balancing the client work and putting out products.
Yep. So when I quit my job, I had the apps making a little bit of money. It was kind of like a baseline at the time, like $2,000, $2,500 a month. And then I had that as a baseline, and then I would freelance on top of that. And so that helped me even out my income, because freelancing can be a bit of a roller coaster. But a lot of people were asking me about app design, and I didn't find any resources that I really liked. And so I started to write down my own, and that eventually grew into a book. And then I learned that if I taught people things about design, so I put out tutorials, I put out blog posts, then people would pay attention. And that was something that I'd never been able to do before up until this point of all my products. And there's actually quite a list of products that I've tried before. I couldn't get people to pay attention. And without attention, I couldn't get sales. And so that was when that lesson finally clicked of, if I teach things, if I give valuable information away for free, then I can build an audience. People will trust me, and they'll be happy to pay for other products.
Gotcha. So let's kind of break that down a little bit. I mean, were you first blogging and putting out tutorials about app design, and then that led to questions about app design, which led to the book? Or did you put out the book, and then kind of in the process to support that, you started blogging more about that topic? Or how did that come together?
Kind of a combination. I had two blog posts about iOS, one about the business side and one about design, and they both did very well. And they were my first blog posts that people actually paid attention to, really, beyond, a few hundred people here and there. And so that's when that lesson set in. From that point, this was July 2012, I went about actually building credibility and launching the book. And so I put out a lot more really detailed, in-depth blog posts on iOS design, so that both to help people and helping build my email list, for the book, but also so that people would see me as a credible expert on the topic. I'd spent a lot of time designing apps, but you know, I hadn't designed anything for startups you would have heard of. You know, I hadn't worked on the Facebook app or the MailChimp app or something like that. And so I needed to put out some content that demonstrated I really knew what I was talking about before my book came out.
Gotcha. And so at that point, this is still your first book here, were you, so you had some blog posts and tutorials, you were building your email list. How were you doing that exactly? Were you giving away like a free chapter of the book or like a pre-course to the book, something like that?
Yeah. So what I did is step one was put up a landing page saying a landing page for the book. And the book was called The App Design Handbook. So it had a header, a short paragraph, a book image off to one side, and then an email opt-in form. The most important thing on that page being the email opt-in form. And I started sharing that around, you know, on Twitter and other places and saying, hey, I'm writing a book. And that got me 40 to 50 people to put in their email address, most of whom I already knew in some way or had already had interactions with online. And then what I did is I wrote a blog post that, you know, I thought was fairly good about design and published that. And at the bottom of the post was at the top of the post was a note saying, I'm writing a book called The App Design Handbook. Learn more about it here and link to the landing page. At the bottom of the post was an email opt-in form that said basically the same thing, writing a book called The App Design Handbook. There was a little icon for the book. Put in your email address to hear more about it when it launches. And so then I took the content of that blog post and sent it to the 40 or 50 people who were already on my list. And basically just to stay in touch. I had that first blog post, and then I started promoting it. You know, promoting a landing page, you can get people to pass it around, share links to it on Hacker News and that sort of thing. But there's not a lot of value just in the landing page itself. Whereas a tutorial that's in depth, you know, I'm going to share that with my design friends because it teaches something. And so that got a lot more traction. And I picked up, you know, maybe 100, 200 more email subscribers. And then I just repeated that process. So I'd write a new blog post and then send it to my now larger group of email subscribers, because it's really important to stay in touch. The last thing you want to do is put up a landing page and collect email addresses, and then 3 months later say, book's here, buy it. And they're like, who are you? How'd you get my email address?
Right.
And they're hovering between clicking delete or clicking spam, which is not a good thing.
Sure.
And so I found that doing that process with about 3 or 4 blog posts that were really good and really in-depth is enough to demonstrate expertise, build a decent email list, and have a successful launch. So just to follow that through to the end of the launch, after a few of those blog posts and about 2 months of time, I had built the email list up to almost 800 people. I think it was 795. And I'd stayed in touch with them almost weekly. And the day before launch, I gave them all the information they would need to know about buying the book. And then on launch day, I just sent an email saying, hey, it's available, pick up your copy. Mm-hmm. And the fun thing about that and about using email in general is within 10 minutes, I'd sold $1,000 worth. And by the end of the day, the book had sold $12,500 worth, which absolutely blew me away compared to revenue from all my other projects.
And this was your very first book. This is not today where, I mean, you've built up a pretty big following right now, but we're talking before all that. This is your book number one.
Yep, exactly. So July 2012, I had maybe 100 combined subscribers like from an RSS feed and that sort of thing. And my blog did almost nothing in traffic. It was really, really sad. Hmm. And then that's when I started the launch, you know, trying to build this list and trying to build up towards the launch of the book. And so 2 months later in September, was when I had those 795 subscribers and the book launch.
Wow, that's amazing. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about putting out blog posts, you know, high value tutorials and building up the list that way. You kind of mentioned that you promote your blog posts. I mean, how do you actually go about doing that? How do you get those first visitors or, you know, the first influx of traffic?
Yeah. So step one, I tweet the link. At the time, I think I had 500 or so Twitter followers, so it wasn't going to go super far. But then the next step would be sending it to your existing list, even if it's 30 people, because you get the advantage of staying in touch. But then also, those people have more engagement with you than anybody else, and they're already interested in your topic. And you just add a note in there, hey, if you enjoyed the post, I'd really appreciate it if you could share it around. And people will. So people would start submitting it to Hacker News. Or if they didn't, I would submit, you know, my early posts. Let's see. I would also try different subreddits on Dig or on Reddit. And then I don't think I ever got any traction on Dig. I think that was before they redid it, or right about the time they were redoing it.
What about like guest article writing? Were you doing any of that for that first book? Or
I didn't do any leading up to that first book before the book came out. I did a handful of guest posts, but they all came out the same day as the book.
Okay.
Which is a good strategy as well.
Right, kind of building up excitement for that launch day. Very cool. So let's kind of get into... So beyond the app design handbook, then you got into designing a second book about designing web applications. And then your third, of course, is Authority, about, it's a book about writing books, I guess. So how do you go about coming up with topics for these books? I mean, pretty clearly you're writing about things that you know quite a bit about, or that you've done quite a bit of work on, but is there any other pre-research into the topic, or even like validation of the topic before you get into it?
Yeah, for me, writing a book, the validation comes from the landing page and how well it collects email subscribers. If you put something out there and you're not able to get 20, 50, 100 email subscribers, I probably wouldn't follow through and write the book.
Gotcha. Has that ever happened? Like, were you kind of toying with two different book ideas? And
no, it hasn't. I've basically just written about what's interesting to me, hoped it's interesting to other people. It's also helpful when you see other books in that topic do well.
Right.
So I'd seen books by Sasha Grief and Jared Drysdale both make money. And so at that point, I knew that you could make money from a design book. And that encouraged me to actually finish the book. But I basically just write about what's interesting to me and hope other people like it. And each time, you know, I've launched three books, and each time before I launch the book, I think, you know, the first time it was, I don't know if people will buy this and have done this before. The second time it was, well, this is a book about a slightly different topic, and, you know, maybe my audience is sick of me writing books. You know, I don't know that I can repeat that. And then the third time it was, this is a book about a totally different topic. Maybe only my design books will sell. Yeah. And so I have kind of that doubt every time.
Yeah.
And it's been unfounded every time.
That's awesome. I mean, that absolutely. Every time I launch something new, the first week I'm expecting zero customers. I just assume nobody's going to buy this. And then.
And sometimes that happens, you know. I've had that happen with enough products that, you know, in some ways it's not unreasonable for me to expect that. But the biggest thing on topics is, about a year ago, I made a commitment because I tried to start a few books before the Aptitude Handbook. They'd be a rough idea. I'd write a few pages and never make progress past that. And I didn't want the Aptitude Handbook to be that. And so I made a commitment after reading an article from Chris Guillebeau. And what he talked about was writing 1,000 words a day. And how, you know, that's a couple of pages. It's not a huge amount of content. I can write that in anywhere between, at the time it was 1 to 2 hours. Now it's like 30 minutes to an hour. And he was just talking about how if you make that consistent progress, it'll turn into a lot of stuff over the course of a year. You know, 365,000 words if you just write 1,000 words a day. And so I made a commitment to do that. I have a little iPhone app that I wrote that tracks that. And so what happened with each book was I wrote the first book, and by the time I finished it, I was at like 85 days in a row. And a day after the App Design Handbook came out, I went, oh, you know, my phone popped up and said, are you going to write 1,000 words today? And I thought, well, my book's done. So what now? And, you know, there's no way I was going to break that chain of 85 or whatever it was days in a row. And so I kept writing it, and I wrote down what was going to be an article on designing web apps. And I just kind of kept writing, and the stuff that resonated with me was on designing web applications. And so, you know, I kept writing, and
so you kind of just like kept on
into a book. Yeah.
Right. You just kind of started writing onto the next thing.
Yep. And after, you know, I released that book 90 days later and was able to take everything that I learned, build into a much bigger launch. And it turned out to be a much more popular topic too. Cool. And so that book did 26,000 and change in sales on the first day.
Wow. Awesome. And so, yeah, I mean, that kind of leads nicely into my next question. Over the course of your three books, what were the biggest changes? You know, what did you learn from book one that you changed in book two and then into book three?
Yeah. So with book one, I did a pricing and packaging strategy. I had the book at $39, $79, and $169 for three different packages. The bottom one is just the book. The next one had book plus videos plus some other resources. And the final one had all of that plus code samples and even more resources and a bunch more stuff. That pricing strategy was hugely important to actually profiting from the book. Most of my revenue comes from the top end package, and I can reliably say that having multiple packages like that at least doubled my revenue from that book than if I had just sold one copy of the book for $39. And so moving to the next book, I refined those prices and that packaging model. And so I went with some higher prices. I went with $39.99 and $249. And that's kind of been the sweet spot that I like now. I also added interviews like to those top end packages. And that worked really, really well, especially because I was able to get some really, really great people. You know, Brennan Dunn, Jason Fried, and a bunch of other really great people to be a part of those interviews. And I think that added a lot of value to the top end packages. I'm trying to think of some other things.
How about in terms of marketing strategy or building up your list leading up to that second and third launch? Did you kind of just repeat the same process, putting out content and having the landing page, or did you try anything new?
I've repeated the exact same process. The things that were different was it was much more refined. The first time when I did it, that process that I described of, you know, landing page, blog post, and the blog to the post, the email list, you know, rinse and repeat. That just kind of happened on the first time around. I wouldn't consider it a system or anything like that until I did it for designing web applications. And so I wrote much better blog posts for designing web applications. They were even more detailed. And I saw it much more as a system rather than just something that worked.
Gotcha.
I also did even more guest posts for designing web apps. And then a change that I made for Authority is I didn't do any guest posts. No, I take that back. I did one guest post instead of the 10 that I'd done for designing web apps. Guest posts are a lot of work, and I wanted to see how the product would do if I didn't focus on that area. It still did well. So it actually did the same. Authority did the same 26,000. I think Authority was $26,700 in the first 24 hours, and designing web apps was $26,500. So they're really, really close.
Nice. I mean, I think, and I've been following your stuff for, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year at this point. Do you think that by the time you reached your third book and doing Authority, your own blog had built up quite a bit of traffic at that point, and that kind of helped?
Yeah.
I know you were doing the 6 month challenge with the SaaS app ConvertKit. I'm sure that brought in quite a bit of interest, right?
Yep. So I think by the time I released Authority, my general blog list was, or email list for the blog was about 5,000 subscribers. 700 of which had specifically signed up to hear more about Authority.
Gotcha. Very cool. I mean, so looking back on the last couple of months to a year, what do you see as kind of, were there any kind of big turning points in terms of a whole rush of new traffic hitting your blog and raising your profile a little bit?
Yeah, so the first big turning point was when I started teaching valuable content that people actually cared about. Each of the books was a big turning point because when you start writing a book, that changed me from a random designer who writes about, you know, not very useful stuff to somebody who's obviously credible because he's working on a book. And that got people to pay a lot more attention. Then another big inflection point would be when I launched the Web App Challenge, which you alluded to. That was me saying in January of this year, I said, books are great. They're doing really well. But I want to build a product that has recurring revenue. So I was going to build a SaaS app. And the requirements were I could only put in 5,000 of my own money. I didn't have an idea yet. And the goal was to get to $5,000 a month in recurring revenue within 6 months. So from no idea to 5,000 a month. I just concluded that, but to tell people how that went, I got to about $2,400 a month in revenue. So came out of it with ConvertKit, which, you know, has a bunch of paying customers and it'll keep growing and doing really well. But announcing that publicly, and if you just Google announcing what the Web App Challenge, you can come across that post. But that post got a lot of people interested and it got shared around a lot because people liked how open and public it was and they wanted to follow the process.
Right.
So that was all of the books and then that post were a big inflection point.
Nice. So let's kind of, try to fill in some of the gaps here before we close. We talked a little bit about ConvertKit and your SaaS app. I mean, one thing that really strikes me is that you were doing this 6 month ConvertKit SaaS app challenge I mean, am I correct? Were you also writing Authority, your third book, during that time, or was that before? It seems like you're doing a lot of different things at once. Is that right?
Yeah. So I wrote Authority at the same time.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Well, that's the thing. If you just write 1,000 words a day, then it's not that hard, right? A decent ebook length is 30,000 to 40,000 words. 1,000 words a day, you write that in a month. Granted, not all that content's going to be good, so it may take you a month and a half or 2 months to write a book length of, you know, actually useful content. My friend James Clear talks about this concept of like average speed versus, you know, I don't know, max speed. And like when people think about writing a book, they think about somebody going away to a cabin for a few weeks and pounding away on this book and just insane amounts of progress. And they come back and they have this manuscript and then they finish it up. And that's not how I work at all. I don't have, you know, right before launch, I'll work like crazy to finish something up. But in general, I just write 1,000 words a day and see what the end result is. And so that average speed of doing, you know, a little bit of stuff of content creation every single day adds up to a lot of things. The other reason I did it is because anyone who buys Authority is a good fit for ConvertKit. And so there's some really good benefits to get people in the door with Authority, teach them all the stuff on email marketing, product promotion, and all that that they need to really use ConvertKit well. And then say, hey, here's a couple months free of ConvertKit. And that worked well to get people over.
Gotcha. Yeah, actually, that was one of the questions I wanted to hit on was, you are doing some cross promotion between ConvertKit and Authority. Are you doing cross promotion between your three books? You know, and like, do you have autoresponders set up where you're, you know, customers of book two are then later on being offered book three or something like that?
I don't have that specifically. You know, everybody goes onto the same email list. And so if you're interested in one of my books, you're going to hear about the others. Unfortunately, there's not really great overlap between all of my books. There is some, but not as much as I would like, I guess. And so I don't cross promote super heavily, except between Authority and ConvertKit.
Gotcha. So let's just kind of jump right back over to the idea of working on different projects simultaneously. You know, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you ever feel like you're spread too thin, or do you kind of thrive on mixing things up and jumping back and forth?
It's good to focus. I really like having solid deadlines to help me focus on one thing. But anytime I think another project will really, really benefit what I'm doing with my primary project, like I thought with ConvertKit and Authority, and then I'll do it. The other thing is I just had so many people asking me about the business and launch side and the writing process of books that to some extent it was, I just need to get all this content out there. So my email inbox will stop blowing up so much. and I knew it was in demand. I'd written launch posts and, you know, like launch summary posts for each of my previous books. And those did really, really well. And so I knew that demand was out there and I just really wanted to write the book. But in general, focus is better. But you know, I'm going to keep coming out with new things. I really like kind of the portfolio model where you have a bunch of different things, you know, a bunch of different courses or ebooks or products. If you can cross sell them nicely. So mine is about as loosely integrated as I think you should go. A great model for closely integrated would be all of Brendan Dunn's stuff. Everything he does targets freelancers just at various stages of their business. And so he can cross promote really, really nicely. I can still cross promote more than I do. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I do really kind of relate to that portfolio model of thinking about where we're taking these, our careers. I mean, I think the other side of that gets a lot more attention. You know, focus on one startup and build it as big as you possibly can, and focus is key. And it is to a certain extent. But I mean, would you say that your goal, or as you see the next couple of years, is to just keep on growing that portfolio and try out different types of products, different formats, different mediums? Or is it, let's see what happens with ConvertKit, or let's see what if one of these blows up? Are you going to become, really focused on one? And, or is it just like, who knows?
Yeah. So what you said briefly about, focusing on one big thing, like a startup would focus on, their core product. The core thing that I focus on is my audience, and growing and building that. And then the products are almost a bit secondary. They're there because they help me grow my audience and help me make money from it. But that core thing that I focus on is totally my audience. So I'm going to keep building more products. I'll probably come out with a Photoshop course at some point. I'm going to try to focus back on design a bit more. But I really expect ConvertKit to grow and really be the big thing that I work on. It's at $2,500 a month in revenue right now. I'd like to have it, $8,000 to $10,000 a month in revenue by the end of the year, and then just grow from there. My goal is long term is to turn ConvertKit into $1 million a year business.
Nice.
So we'll see how that goes. One reason that I want to keep releasing products is because it makes it easier to keep learning. I have more stats and knowledge and all of that for launch case studies. And
sure.
That stuff is just so much fun.
Yeah, totally. So we're midway through 2013 here. One thing that I like to ask every guest on the show is, what is your biggest challenge right now? And what are you doing to work through it? I think a lot of people, like outsiders looking in, they see all your successes, and you're just killing it with your books and products. But I mean, there's got to be something that's challenging you. So what would you say?
Yeah, can I give two things?
Absolutely.
All right. So the first thing is learning to code in Ruby on Rails. As a designer, I've always done a lot of HTML and CSS. I learned Objective-C, and I never got great at it, but I could code. And ConvertKit's written in Rails. I'm working with a fantastic developer on it. But I get really frustrated when there are things that I feel like I should be easy to implement and fix. And I'm just having a terrible time learning Rails, and I hate relying exclusively on somebody else. So that's why I'm trying to learn it, and it hasn't been going very well. I just need to put in probably a lot more time than I am doing right now. The other thing is getting customers for a SaaS application is a lot harder than I expected. I find it far easier to sell a one-time product, and that's been a big challenge. So that's the big thing that I'm working on now. I've been doing a lot more direct sales, like talking, instead of writing a blog post and hoping that somebody will click through and sign up in, vague terms like that. I've been identifying people and saying, I think you're a really good fit for ConvertKit. Let's talk about it. And that's worked fairly well. So really, it's going to take a lot more work. In the first 6 months, I got ConvertKit to where it's at. Now in the next 6 months, I'd like to quadruple its revenue. And so that's certainly going to be a challenge, but I think it's totally possible.
Cool. And final question here, what is coming up for you and your businesses? You're clearly focusing on ConvertKit the rest of this year. Anything else on your radar?
You know, my first book, The App Design Handbook, I'm going to rewrite that. iOS 7 is coming out. A lot of things are changing. So I'll rewrite that and release a new version. Hopefully without distracting from ConvertKit too much.
Very cool. Nathan, thanks a lot for taking the time. Where can people reach out to you and connect?
So my blog is at nathanberry.com, and Barry is spelled B-A-R-R-Y. And then you can also email me nathan@convertkit.com. And then the last thing I'd say is we talked a bit about product launches, which is one of my favorite topics. And I put together an email course powered by ConvertKit, of course, that really, over a couple of weeks, really dives into product launches. And it's all free. And if you go to nathanberry.com/launch, then you can hop on that list. And people have said that the content is really, really helpful. And so
Very cool.
Check that out.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, I've been following your stuff for a while, and it's all very inspiring and really very educational, you know. So I thank you for that. And I highly recommend that the audience here goes and checks out your stuff. So we'll definitely link up all these things in the show notes for this post, which is coming out on Monday. And Nathan, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I really enjoyed that conversation with Nathan, and here are a few of my takeaways. Number one, this is what really stood out to me. It was when he talked about his, you know, the lead up to his launch of his first book. You know, all it took was just a few high quality tutorials published on his own blog, which linked to his landing page for the book, and that was how he built a pre-launch mailing list, which ultimately helped him do over $10,000 in sales on the first day. You know, he didn't have a massive audience at the time, and but the launch was still a huge success. So that one is really making me rethink my strategy for the next few weeks as I'm starting to get the ball rolling on writing my first book. My plan was to do as many guest articles on other blogs as I can over the next 6 months. But I think I'm actually going to pull back on that strategy a little bit and focus more on publishing really great content here on my blog at castjam.com. You know, I'm also going to do more video posts as well here on Castjam. So, I think that will add more value than the guest articles probably would. So we'll see how that goes. The second takeaway from my interview with Nathan was, he realized that he must build trust and credibility with his audience first before he can expect sales. You know, he talked about how his very first business was a WordPress themes company. He said that he only did $140 in revenue. You compare that to over 10,000 on his first day of selling his book, and you wonder what's the difference between these two. And the difference was that he built an audience built around trust and credibility for the book, and he didn't do that when he had launched his WordPress themes company. So that was a good takeaway right there. And the third takeaway here is when I asked about which products he wants to focus on most, you know, because he's involved in so many different things, his books, iOS apps, his SaaS app. It was an interesting answer. Nathan said that his primary focus is his audience and providing as much value as possible to his audience. That's kind of first and foremost. And then the monetization stuff, the products and the other things are kind of byproducts of building and nurturing this trusting relationship with his audience. So that one really stood out to me as well. I hope you guys are taking a lot away from this and really putting some of these ideas into action, and of course tweaking them to fit and suit your particular situation in your bootstrap startups. And please, you know, give me some feedback on this interview and tell me what you're learning, what really stood out. And I would also love some feedback on how I'm actually presenting these interviews, because I'm always looking to improve on that front as well. So do let me know about that. Tune in next Monday and every Monday for another episode of Bootstrapped Web. I'm definitely very excited about the upcoming schedule of guest interviews, so looking forward to that. And finally, I want to tell you about a special report that I released on my blog last week. It's called 10 First Year Mistakes and Lessons Learned Bootstrapping a Startup. So I give you some of the key lessons that I learned the hard way to hopefully help you avoid some of the same pitfalls. You can get your copy by going over to castjam.com and joining my newsletter. So thanks for tuning in, and let's catch up on Twitter between now and next week. Take care.